You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. See all the action from every game with full game replays. You can also replay an entire game and catch all the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. So go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. And we are back here with our Purple Friday edition of Locked On Ravens. And I think it's a good Purple Friday today because we have Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire back with us to both go over the Ravens 31-17 win over the Washington football team and then get into our game preview and predictions of the Ravens week 5 matchup with the Cincinnati Bengals. Matthew, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well also, and it makes it all so much better after a win. Everything just feels better. The week is better. The week 3, the aftermath of that, didn't feel so nice. But now here we are after a week 4 win, the Ravens 3-1, and it feels good. But Matthew, I first want to talk to you about this game that the Ravens played last Sunday against the Washington football team, a 31-17 victory. Just your overall thoughts on both the offense and the defense. So let's start off with the offense, where Lamar Jackson finished today 14 of 21 for 193 yards with 2 touchdowns. And that interception towards the end of the first half, the running game averaged 4.5 yards per carry, led by Gus Edwards, who led the team in carries, and Lamar Jackson led the team in rushing yards, kind of padded by that 50-yard touchdown, where Marquise Brown also led the team in receiving yards with 4 receptions for 86 yards. So, Matthew, how did this offense look to you on Sunday, and what can they build on going into Week 5?
Well, I think a lot of people are looking at the game and going, look, they should have beat them by a lot more. And in all fairness, you're probably pretty right on that one. But they still beat them by 14 points. And, you know, if you consider a garbage time touchdown there at the end, they would have beaten them by even more. You know, they put a pretty thorough whooping on Washington there. I know quarterback Lamar Jackson has gotten a lot of flack this week. But at the same time, when you look at his stats, I mean, 66.7% completion rate. That's not terrible by any stretch of the imagination. A 9.2 yards per attempt is actually one of the highest ones if you were to compare it to the entire league right now across the season. That would place him second above Josh Allen and right behind Russell Wilson in yards per attempt or yards per completion for the season. So that's not terrible. He took 1 sack again against a really talented front 7. He did have that 1 bad interception, and that's, you know, to be expected, in my opinion, considering the fact they're coming off of no preseason games. So the timing's going to be off, and that's exactly what it was. Jackson just threw the ball a little bit before Boykin was ready for it. The defender was able to make a play on it. Those types of things happen. Still, he had 2 touchdowns to 1 interception. And, of course, he lit it up on the ground. 7 attempts, 53 yards, 7.6 yard per carry average, including that 50-yard touchdown that he had, the longest of his career to date. Lamar Jackson, all in all, again, I think looked pretty solid. The rushing attack, it was nice to see them run it 32 times. Of course, a 144 yards on the ground. He had 2 touchdowns, 4.5 yards per attempt on the rushing attack. And that's including Robert Griffin, who, you know, took 3 kneels, you know, a grand total of 1 yard per attempt for him there. So it's easy to criticize this team. It's easy to criticize this offense and say they should have done more. But when you look at that stat block, you got to look at it and go, I mean, that's perfectly acceptable. That's a solid effort. To get into some of the critiques, it would have been nice to see Jackson connect on a few of those deep shots to Marquise Brown. Brown had 86 yards on 4 catches. Would have been cool if he caught another 2 of them. You're looking at least 1 touchdown and another 60 yards added to that total. They probably would have blown out Washington by significantly more had they been able to connect on a few of those. Those are things you want to see happen over the course of the season. But again, no preseason, very limited time working out this offseason. I can't complain. I cannot complain about what we saw Sunday against the Washington football team.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that we just saw so much of a pure domination from Baltimore in 2019, where it was they were putting up 49 points and 46 points and 45 points, just like all these 40-point games strung, you know, together. That's tough to kind of replicate season by season. Baltimore's still outscoring their opponents by 12.25 points per game, even with that Kansas City loss factored in. They're doing their job on the offensive side of the ball, and I was also impressed, Matthew, with what we saw from Baltimore on the offensive side of the ball in this Week 4 game. But moving on to the defense, you know, it was kind of a mixed bag, but Baltimore ultimately played that bend-don't-break mentality where they gave Washington everything short. They got burned by the screen passes seemingly all game. Dwayne Haskins, who is now no longer the starter in Washington, went 32 of 45 for 314 yards. But we saw Matthew Judon get his first two sacks of the year. Jalen Ferguson also was able to accumulate a sack. Patrick Queen, who outside of that Kansas City game has looked very good, led the team with 12 total tackles. Marlon Humphrey had his signature punch out. Overall, I'd say it was a pretty solid game from this Baltimore Ravens defense. Matthew, what did you see?
Well, you mentioned it. You know, Dwayne Haskins, while he racked up the yards, 314 yards, no touchdowns, granted, no interceptions either, but a large number of his passes and his yards came from screens. I mean, you really got to go ahead and hand it to Antonio Gibson, who did so much with the chances given to him. In total, throws to the running backs, Antonio Gibson and McKissick, turned into 122 yards. So if you account for everything that Haskins did, 34% of his completions in that game went to running backs, and they accounted for 39% of his passing yards. You know, you'd never want to see screens go ahead and gouge you that much, but look at the final score. I'd much rather teams go ahead and throw it to the running back all season long than go ahead and beat them deep for a touchdown in every other play. I'm okay with that effort, everything considered. Look, it's not the domination that we saw from this team last year. Again, I want to preface all of this by saying this team through 4 weeks last year was not good. The defense especially, but the defense was getting beat up left and right. They made some changes, and they went from one of the worst units in football to one of the best units in football over the course of like 3 weeks. So not saying that that's going to happen this year, but you got to give them a little bit of slack. And there is some very clear points saying that, you know, they're going to get better. But even in this game, yeah, again, if you look at the stat sheet, it looks a little weird. 314 yard passing yards is pretty terrible, but man, more than a third of his yards came in screens. And if you're going up against the top quarterbacks in this league, a screen pass is the check down. A screen pass is the last thing really an offense really wants to do. They'd rather hit you on the deep strikes all day long or march down the field a little bit more efficiently. And again, largely speaking, Dwayne Haskins wasn't able to do that in a lot of other ways outside of the screen passes. So that's not terrible. And if you look at the rush defense, 22 attempts, 69 yards, granted two touchdowns, that does hurt. That does hurt. But you're still talking about 3.1 yard per carry average. That's not terrible. Again, this is not their best effort by any stretch of the imagination. I think we all came out of this game going, man, they left a lot of points on the table. They left a lot of drives that could have been stalled, a lot of three and outs they could have had for Washington. They could have done better on that. But they still beat them by two scores. And in this league, beating a team by 14 points is a whooping.
Yeah, Baltimore, again, they did their job. They were able to play this the way that they were able to with the bend, don't break, giving Washington screens. Because you look at it, the Ravens had the lead. They held the lead for the entire game. They were able to run the clock, bleed the clock. And Washington, they were able to get their yards on the screens, as you mentioned, but at the end of the day, they were not able to beat the Ravens deep, which I think was the game plan all along. So yes, Dwayne Haskins was able to put up over 300 yards, but Washington wasn't able to finish those drives. They were only able to score pretty much one touchdown, I'll say, because the end of the game touchdown that Washington scored, I mean, it was when the Ravens' best players were out of the game. And so credit to them, but I think this game, the score at least, it was in Baltimore's favor a lot more than I think the box score and even the score itself does indicate. But finally here, Matthew, before we head into our first break, there was a bit of Ravens transactional news. At the time of this recording, we don't know who's going to take the roster spot, but Geno Stone is officially a free agent, put on waivers by Baltimore. The Ravens ultimately decided to part ways with him. For the time being, there is a sense that the Ravens would like him back on their practice squad if he does clear through waivers. But this does open up an active roster spot, and there are a couple things the Ravens could do with this spot, Matthew. And I want to get your opinion on what you ultimately think led to this move to release Geno Stone and what you think this roster spot is going to be used for. They have Marcus Gilchrist, who they signed a week ago, who is a veteran, played in over 100 games. He could fill that role. Tony Jefferson, they've had discussions about bringing him back. Brandon Carr, I think the same thing. There have even been those rumors of Eric Weddle coming back for whatever those are worth. So, Matthew, what do you think led to this decision to part ways with Geno Stone now? And what do you think his roster spot is ultimately going to be used for?
Well, I think when you look at this move, you have to look at the fact that Geno Stone has been a healthy inactive for 4 weeks. So they're clearly not getting anything out of him. And that's not necessarily to his detriment. It's not necessarily his fault. It's just you're going to have guys who are inactive several games this year, if not all the games this year. It doesn't mean they don't earn a roster spot. It doesn't mean they're not good enough. That being said, I was kind of shocked they decided to keep Geno Stone on the 53-man roster when Nigel Warrior, the undrafted free agent safety that they brought in, had actually outplayed him throughout training camp. I figured they were going to go with the undrafted guy. Of course, with this offseason being what it is, you couldn't bring guys in for tests. There wasn't a lot of film on anyone through new preseason games. So in turn, keeping your draft picks made the most sense. Nobody's really going ahead and shuffling around undrafted free agents in this league right now, at least not the way that they normally do in a regular season. So from a logistics standpoint, it made sense. But at the same time, when you look at the roster, you go, all right, well, they're a little thin at safety right now, so they probably need to get someone in here who can kind of play that double role. Or maybe they feel that a guy like Jimmy Smith really could bounce back to safety instead of playing that kind of like heavy slot role he has been playing up to this point. So I think that's really going to determine what their eventual move is. I'd like to think that they are giving up a ton of passing yards. They are having some trouble from the slot with Tavon Young's injury. I'm guessing they're probably going to end up adding another defensive back, another guy whose primary job is going to be in coverage. They don't have a lot of cornerbacks on the active roster right now. That's a little bit of a concern. So it's interesting to see what they're going to do. At the same time, if you look at this week's injury reports, you've had Tyree Phillips out for two practices. You've had Ronnie Stanley, who missed last week's game and has been out for Wednesday's practice and limited for Thursday's practice. That's potentially two starting offensive linemen that are going to be out of this game. Bringing in an extra offensive lineman also makes a ton of sense. And then, of course, from a just fan standpoint, like you start going, oh, man, maybe they're going to go ahead and trade for someone. Maybe this is all this is. Chances are it's not, if we're being honest. Baltimore tends to make those moves as a lump sum rather than kind of leading anyone to believe that they're going to do that beforehand by cutting someone and opening up a roster spot and then making a trade. That's not typically how Baltimore does things. But that is also, this is about the time last year that Baltimore started looking at bringing some guys in off the street in order to make some of those changes, get some more positive play, positive production out of guys that were just a little bit more experienced. So I would not put it past Baltimore to really add anyone at this point, either free agency or a guy like you mentioned from the practice squad, bring him up since he has so much experience. That makes a lot of sense for Baltimore as well.
Yeah, and with Geno Stone being inactive for four straight weeks, Baltimore doesn't necessarily need to have whoever takes his roster spot active immediately. So it could be somebody who is off the street, like a Brandon Carr, like a Tony Jefferson, who they can keep on the sideline for a week and get them up to speed and then make them active for next week's game. So there's a lot they could do with it. Also, you mentioned the trade piece. There's potential for that as well. So there are a lot of different moving pieces. And again, we don't really have all of the updates right now. As we're recording this, we don't know a ton. But I think that whatever Baltimore does, yes, you're right. This is the time that Baltimore started to look at bringing guys in and making different roster moves. So for Baltimore, this is a really interesting thing that they did here, a really interesting transaction, and we'll see what they ultimately end up doing with it. But we're going to head into our first break now, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about the Ravens Week 5 matchup with the Cincinnati Bengals, getting into the Ravens offense against the Bengals defense. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. They remember your order and call you by name, always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support, so let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, help your team score and choose to shop at local businesses. And while you're there, look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. If you go to madefootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back with our second segment of this Purple Friday edition of Locked on Ravens. Your host, Kevin Ostreicher, still here with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. And Matthew, as we kind of transition into talking about the Ravens Week 5 matchup with the Cincinnati Bengals, I think starting off on the offensive side of the ball, we have to talk about this injury report. You mentioned Tyre Phillips, the offensive lineman, the starting right guard, missing two practices. Now, as of this recording, Lamar Jackson has missed two practices, one on Wednesday with the knee injury that's considered minor, and then the one yesterday where most are attributing it to a stomach bug. Both aren't serious, according to most reports, and he is expected to play on Sunday. But Matthew, is there any level of concern with you right now about this knee injury that he apparently suffered in the second to last play he was in on against this Washington football team? Are you at any point or at any time concerned with maybe this is a lingering thing that's going to go on, or are you full sail ahead with Lamar Jackson for Sunday?
I think you have to be concerned. I mean, even though the report I've seen has come from ESPN's Adam Schefter that the knee injury isn't serious, you know, and I've said this multiple times before on this show, sometimes you got to look where sources are coming from, and it could be from a player's agent. It could be from the team themselves. They're leaking it out there in an effort to kind of control the narrative. Knee injuries can plague a guy an entire season, especially a guy who is as mobile as Lamar Jackson is. And you better know that teams are, you know, look, you're not looking to hurt a guy, but if you know his left knee's bang up, maybe you look to hit him on the left side a little harder. Maybe you think you can take him down via his legs rather than trying to hit him up in the stomach. Those small things make a difference. And when you consider that Lamar Jackson has, throughout his career, he tends to, especially when under pressure, mental pressure more so than actual physical pressure, he tends to kind of revert back to, I like to call it kind of backyard football, where his mechanics get a little sloppier. He tends to be a little less great about going through his reads properly and things like that. And he tends to give it to the same one or two guys that he has trust in. If a knee injury is bugging you a little bit more, it makes sense that if you feel like you need to keep up with a team like the Kansas City Chiefs, or let's just say Cincinnati starts putting up points and Lamar Jackson feels like he needs to keep up, his mechanics are going to be cut back a little bit further because there's that issue of his knee. He's not going to want to step into his throws as much. Again, that could not be the case either. His knee really could be, it's a slight bruise. They're just holding him out a practice or two in an effort to let it heal up. And look, you know, the guy's going to do what he's going to do. He doesn't need to practice all week. Maybe that's it. But again, whenever you start talking about a guy who, let me preface it this way. What I was always told in high school is, as a running back, look, if your legs are messed up, those are your wheels. You can't go driving on the highway on a flat tire. If Lamar Jackson's knee is a little banged up, it's going to be harder for him to do the things that Lamar Jackson does that makes Lamar Jackson the guy that he is. So, yeah, it's concerning to me. We'll see Friday's injury report, what his injury status is going to be. If it really isn't serious, he's going to be questionable. If it's a little bit more serious than what Baltimore's been making it out to be, he'll be doubtful or out. And then we'll see how he looks this week. You know, if it's something that is clearly affecting him and he goes back on the injury report next week with a knee injury, it's really time to get a little concerned about Lamar Jackson, his effectiveness on that front. But as of right now, it's not something that I would completely panic over yet, but you're really going to want to watch for that injury report on Friday.
Yeah, I agree. And sticking with that injury report, Matthew, kind of what we talked a little bit about in the first segment with Tyre Phillips. Now, he's filled in for Marshall Yanda, and obviously it's so hard to kind of replicate what a Hall of Fame offensive lineman or future Hall of Fame offensive lineman did for this Baltimore Ravens organization. But with Phillips potentially being out for this game, it's pretty obvious, at least I think it's pretty obvious, that DJ Fluker would probably be the guy to slide into right guard if Phillips does miss this game. Do you share that same sentiment, Matthew? And if Phillips does miss the game, how much does the Ravens offensive line scheme change, if at all?
I think, you know, that would be my first guess is if Tyre Phillips is out. I honestly thought, and I'm sure, again, I'm on record saying this, so DJ Fluker, I thought he was going to start. Baltimore tends to go with the more veteran guy in those situations. So a little shock that Tyre Phillips got the start week one anyway. So Fluker makes the most sense to go back in there. That being said, is Ronnie Stanley also missed Wednesday's practice, also limited on Thursday. You know, he is a question mark for this week, regardless of, you know, what John Harbaugh said after the game or on Monday when he was, not that big of a deal. It's blah, 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 blah. He's going to be at least questionable for this game. If that's the case, all of a sudden this offensive line gets shaken up a lot. DJ Fluker moved over to right tackle Orlando Brown Jr. came over to left tackle in order to take over for Ronnie Stanley. Baltimore had some decent success, but you'd be probably looking at a similar situation. Plus now you have to fill guard. So that's my major concern as a whole. As far as DJ Fluker coming in at right guard only, I don't think you really skip that much of a beat. If I'm being honest with you, I think Fluker makes a lot of sense as a guard. He's a big guy. He's capable of bullying inside. He's able to do a lot of the power moves that Baltimore likes to do with that side of their offensive line, at least in the past, what they've liked to do. He's slimmed down quite a bit, so hopefully he's somewhat mobile. But more importantly, the guy is a giant of a human being, like a ridiculous giant with just super long arms. That is effective as a tackle, but as a guard, it's especially effective. You don't let those big, meaty, heavy guys, your strong guys, inside. If you can keep them out far enough, they can't do a lot of the damage. And again, going up against this Bengals team who has guys like Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins, you got some big, strong, beefy guys in the middle there that are going to try to do some damage.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And Fluker, you have two mammoths on the right side with Fluker and Orlando Brown Jr. But again, if Stanley, if they want to give him that extra week and Phillips is also out, then there is that scrambling that the Ravens are going to have to do. And you might see Ben Powers. You might see Ben Bredesen. You might see Patrick McCarty. There is a lot of things, a lot of moving pieces right now because of the Ravens injury report and the injury status that Baltimore currently has with a bunch of players. But moving into some non-injury related questions here for the offensive side of the ball, Matthew, I think we have to talk about the Ravens receiving group. And, you know, this can include the tight ends as well, because Mark Andrews is certainly a big time receiver for this Ravens offense. But you have Marquise Brown leading this team with 242 yards, followed by Mark Andrews with 166. So they're your 1-2 punch. And obviously teams are going to focus more on them because those are the guys who have been threats so far. But Matthew, I think other guys, they have to step up, whether it be Miles Boykin, whether it be Willie Snead, or do they give Devin Duvernay more of the offensive share and snap counts as we kind of move forward into the year? How important is it for somebody, not named Marquise Brown or Mark Andrews, to get involved in the passing game against the Bengals?
I think a lot, man. And you hit it right on top of the head for what I was going to say, which is, you know, it's great that Andrews is doing it. It's great that, you know, Marquise Brown is doing it. Those guys should be doing it. That's what you've brought them in for. It's why they were such high round picks. It's why you've given them such a heavy workload this season. You hyped them up so much. But at the same time, you know, we've seen through four games now, those guys are sometimes taken out. Again, especially in the biggest pressure moments, then you need to start relying on guys like Boykin and Snead and Boyle and Duvernay and, you know, even your running backs, especially. I mean, Baltimore, I think when they were at one of their most efficient over the last decade was when they were using guys like Ray Rice, when they were giving their quarterbacks the chance to go ahead and pick up some yardage that way. You got a guy like J.K. Dobbins. You got a guy like Mark Ingram, who both can do things outside of the tackles if you give them a chance. It would be nice to see some of that stuff happen. and maybe take advantage of some of the aggressiveness we're seeing from opposing defenses here, who are really trying to bottle up Lamar Jackson. You know, as we saw against Dwayne Haskins, man, a screen really works well when they're sending a lot of pressure at you. And so far, that's what Lamar Jackson has faced this year. So I think it's super important. You got to get those guys involved because, you know, again, Marquise Brown, while he's a deep threat, Lamar Jackson hasn't been able to connect on those all that consistently. And underneath routes, a little harder for him to get open. Same thing goes with Mark Andrews, who, you know, not necessarily the deepest of deep threats, but is a guy that they really like throwing up the seam in an effort to get open that way against the combo safety linebacker. I think you got to start relying a lot more on especially Willie Snead, your slot receiver, most experienced option in this passing attack so far, and a guy that, you know, you brought back this year as kind of that security blanket. And so far, he's got 10 receptions, 10 targets, 117 yards, and one touchdown. Not terrible stats if it was for two games. Not great when it's four games, though.
Yeah, exactly. It just has to be somebody else because eventually, and I mean, it's already starting to happen. Teams are doubling Mark Andrews. Teams are putting a safety over the top of Marquise Brown. Willie Steen and Miles Boykin in particular, I'll focus on them for a second. They're great in this Ravens system because they can block, but they have to produce more. And part of it, I do think, is the usage by Baltimore. I'm not going to pin it all on these guys. I think it's a joint effort here. The Ravens took a chance on a Miles Boykin year two leap, and so far, it hasn't really panned out the way they wanted to or they wanted it to. So for Baltimore, hopefully someone can step up in this Week 5 game. We're going to head into our final break here, and when we get back, we're going to be flipping the field, talking about the Ravens defense going up against Joe Burrow and that Bengals offense. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. We return with our final segment of this Purple Friday Locked On Ravens episode, Week 5 edition. Your host, Kevin Allstriker, still talking with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. And Matthew, the big storyline of this game in general is Lamar Jackson versus Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow, the stud rookie from the Cincinnati Bengals, obviously the number one overall pick after that historic year at LSU. But Baltimore has had some success against young quarterbacks, rookies, second-year, third-year guys, on the defensive side of the ball because the Ravens' defense is so complex. They throw everything at you. They have complex blitz schemes, complex coverage schemes. They will play man. They will play zone. They will play off. They will play press. They do a ton to confuse quarterbacks. So with Joe Burrow going into his fifth NFL game, with no preseason, a shortened offseason, he's looked good so far. 65.5 completion percentage, 1,121 yards throwing the football, 6 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. What does this Ravens defense have to do, not only to slow Joe Burrow down, but to make him struggle?
Well, I think it's the same thing they've really needed to do all season, which is get pressure without having to send the whole kitchen sink at a guy. That's been their biggest issue thus far. I mean, they've got great cornerbacks, but you're having to move Humphrey inside. You've got Jimmy Smith, who is a little banged up, as is the norm for him. And you've got him trying to play all over the place. You've got Anthony Averett now starting on the outside. And while I think Averett is a solid cornerback, he's not exactly Marcus Peters or Marlon Humphrey. And then you got a young safety in you know, Deshaun Elliott that's coming in there. So you can't necessarily leave these guys out on islands all game, every game. As we're seeing, they're allowing up passing yards by just the bucketful this season. They're one of the worst teams in giving up passing yards in the NFL through four games. So that's a concern. And I think, you know, you brought in Campbell, you have Judon in on a franchise tag. Williams was expected to do a lot more on the interior. Bowser was supposed to make a step up. You've got sack daddy Jalen Ferguson, who thus far has not lived up to that name or his draft status. A lot of these guys that need to be doing better, need to be winning their matchups a lot more one-on-one than having to send blitz, having to send that pressure from all over the place. I think it's nice when you're able to do that and you're able to throw off a young quarterback like Joe Burrow by sending a safety blitz when he's not expecting it, or dropping a defensive lineman into coverage when he's not expecting that. Those things help. But when you have to do it every single game, every single snap, Joe Burrow is going to have a lot of tape to look at of this team and go, all right, I kind of know what's coming, more than he would have, I think, in previous years had Baltimore been able to get more pressure up front they would have been able to throw a lot more at him this week. That was never once on film. And I think they would have gotten at him a lot more. And as you mentioned, Burrow is lighting it up right now. I mean, the guy is, I think, 10th in total yards and like 9th in average per completion. So he's certainly doing everything he needs to be doing as a quarterback to find success in this league. And giving him a secondary like they gave Haskins or Patrick Mahomes, for that matter, that is open and struggling and trying to keep up, it's a recipe for a big game for the rookie. And as we've seen so far for Cincinnati, Burrow has been the guy that's keeping them in every single game. Two losses, a combined total of 8 points. That's not too bad.
No, not at all. And hopefully, if Joe Burrow does get passing yards by the bucketful, as you said, the Ravens will be playing their game. They'll have the lead. They'll be able to control the clock. And they'll give Joe Burrow everything that's not deep so that they have to, in turn, drain the clock on offense, maybe only get 3 points here or there. There's a lot that goes into this Ravens defensive strategy, but ideally, you'd like to put pressure on Joe Burrow. And that's my next question for you, Matthew, for this Ravens defense. The Bengals, they have struggled to protect Joe Burrow. It was better last week for the rookie, but that offensive line, outside of Jonah Williams, it's really just in shambles right now. If the Ravens aren't able to get a ton of pressure or bring Joe Burrow down on Sunday, do you think big changes could be coming?
I do. I certainly do. I mean, again, we looked at last season, and you know, Eric DaCosta as a general manager doesn't have a ton of portfolio to work with here in terms of, you know, what is he most likely to do. We could pretty well guess what Ozzie Newsome would do in these situations, but Eric DaCosta has been proven to, at least thus far, be a lot more aggressive, be more willing to go out for trades, be more willing to go, yeah, look, you're not working out, get out of here, we're good without you, let's bring someone else in, we need the roster spot. So I you know, 5 weeks, if they cannot get to Joe Burrow with this awful, and I cannot highlight how terrible the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line has been. Terrible. At points, not even blocking a player, just whiffing on air. I've seen plastic bags block more efficiently than the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line. If they can't get pressure, you know you don't have it on this roster. I mean, if we're going to be blank about it, you know Baltimore cannot get pressure on a quarterback with a four-man front. They just cannot do it if they can't do it in week five. So I'd have to imagine Eric DaCosta, if all history points to this being accurate, being aggressive and going out there and getting a guy that's maybe on a team that isn't doing well, that expected to do well, a team that is in the process of rebuilding, a team that is, you know, just has a terrible GM that maybe you can go after a little bit and get a good deal. Going after those types of guys, bringing someone in that is on still maybe their rookie deal or is on a cheap deal if you're going to do a trade, doing that, or bringing guys like Clay Matthews and those types of players who are still potentially free agents, and we're looking for a scenario just like this to hopefully liven up this defense. Again, you look at Marcus Peters last year, you look Jihad Ward, Justin Ellis, they brought in Josh Bynes last year. They made a lot of moves right around this point when things weren't working out. They identified their weaknesses over the first 4 or 5 weeks, and they went and attacked it in free agency and trade. So, again, I think this is your best test for this pass rush. If they cannot get it done, you do not have the guys on the roster who are ever going to be able to get it done, at least not this season, and it's time, if you think you're a Super Bowl team, to go get someone who can.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And also, that was quite the glowing review you gave of that Bengals offensive line. I'm sure they would be proud to hear everything you had to say about them. But yeah, they've been not a great unit. Not great. And, you know, you described it. I don't even have to describe it. You put it into words. But Matthew, I want to talk now about final score predictions for this game here, finally, because this is a game where the Ravens cannot underestimate their opponent. They just can't do it. They can't play down. This is a game they should win. It's a rookie quarterback, but that rookie quarterback has been playing very, very well. So how do you see this one going?
You know, I've yet to actually kind of think about this in this way. So you're going to get me completely off the cuff here. I think Baltimore, they're going to look a lot like last week, in which we kind of, after the game, go, ugh, that was not a great game from Baltimore. They left a lot of points out on the board or out on the field. They could have shut down the offense a lot more than they did. There's some clear weaknesses on this team. I don't think they get resolved all of a sudden. And Joe Burrow has been putting up like 300 yards every single week. So I doubt that's going to change against this team who's been allowing just about as many every single week as well. So you know what? Let's just use last week's score. I'm going to say it's, 31-17? Yeah, I think this is another one of those games where we go, yeah, but it was still like they beat them by two scores. That's a beatdown in any time in this league. That's a huge margin of victory. But, man, you can't feel like Baltimore could have beaten them 45 to, like, 3.
Yeah, a lot of these Ravens games so far, you know, the score doesn't really say that they won by a lot, but it feels like they win by a lot. And even when the score is 2 possessions, people were saying, oh, well, wait, that's not 30 points. That's not 35 points. So they played terribly. Now, I agree with you, Matthew. I think it's going to be around the same score the Washington game was. I'll say 30-20 Ravens. I think, again, the score doesn't really indicate that the Ravens, I think, not dominate, but they play a lot better than the Bengals. Maybe there's a late touchdown like we saw in the Washington game. But at the end of the day, I think Baltimore should be able to win this game. Even if Lamar Jackson is a bit slowed by that injury, I still think the offense will be able to take advantage of the Bengals linebackers. You have Josh Bynes in there, who's been all right this year. Not great from a football perspective, great from a leadership perspective. And then also just hopefully confusing Joe Burrow. But Matthew, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Hopefully when we get back next week, 4-1 sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Man, it does. It does. And you know, you're highlighting it here, but 4-1 ain't bad regardless of what the scores are in any of these weeks. 4-1 is the road to the playoffs, baby. And we've all seen this Baltimore team turn it on when they get into the playoffs, despite not really having quite as big of a shot as everyone thinks they do. So maybe this is just the start of that Cinderella season that ends with them doing snow angels in confetti in February.
Oh, man, that sounds good to me. I'll take that. Again, it doesn't matter if you win by one. It doesn't matter if you win by 30. A win is a win. And if you go 1-0 every week, that's all you can ask for. But that's all we have here on Locked On Ravens for the week. We're going to take a two-day break. And when we get back on Monday, we'll be diving into everything related to the Bengals at Ravens games. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you on Monday.